that we were doing the SOP review and a critical spare review. That's for that particular portion for Swan Lake. And we're starting to review all that, you know, and then of course you have to kind of gauge expense and risk, and you know, you can't have spares for everything, but some things you need, some really long lead times, and that becomes a little bit of a philosophical question from the board. How, you know, how much do we want to hold in inventory, such as some of these, you know, transformers and large breakers and stuff, but they get into some pretty big money.
Okay.
We're working on getting a concise list together.
Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
A question for Robert. Is this project of remove and install, is it in-house or is it a contract?
If you do, this will be contracted.
Okay.
EPS or someone similar.
Thank you.
Or EPC.
Okay. That takes us on to the next one, R&R 19303, page 39. Governor Pressure System Controls. Robert, you want to speak to that one too, please?
Yep, we initially intended on having this done before the end. This is an R&R from last year. We intended on having it done by the week from now, but we have outages scheduled for later this year due to the conditions we're in. So. Should be done in this one. I think is going to be done in September. I put July through.
We have September down.
Yeah, stop September. Yep, completed in September. So this one says July here, but I think that needs to be a September in that language there.
Oh.
This down.
Were there any questions on this particular one?
Any other questions?
All right. Moving on to R&R 19304, page 40. Governor Pressure System Controls. That's on Tyee's facility.
Yep, same story there. One thing I'd want to note on the Tyee Governor Pressure System Controls is we're going to be doing the governor tuning at the same time. So that will take a single unit outage. We have to drain the actuator tanks to do this project. The challenge with Tyee's actuator tank is it's such a high pressure. You can fill it up to your normal air pressure, but then you've got to get it to a higher pressure. And so there's a chugger on site. It takes about 24 hours to get back up the pressure. So we're looking at a way to bring air in from outside to decrease that outage time, because we should be able to have a unit down and work completed in under 24 hours per unit. We don't want to add 24 hours to that outage. So.
Thank you.
Okay. All good there. Moving on to RR 19305, Governor PLC Modernization, page 41. Robert, you can keep going, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Last year we put in Flex 500 PLC, Governor PLCs for Swan Lake, and those Governor PLCs are industry standard, top of the line, Woodward Governor, digital governors. Same thing was going to be what we would do at Tyee. I put a hold on that R&R project because I wanted to see Swan Lake run isochronous, dual isochronous, as Tyee runs today. So right now, Swan Lake's running an isochronous as we sit here today, but we've had issues with having it running with two units, and I want to see those issues resolved. That's part of our hydraulic study and our integration of the algorithm to determine isochronous load sharing. And so the results of that will determine how we go forward with the Tyee PLC governor modernization. We want to make sure we're reliable before we go to a two-run unit. So that's why this project is on hold. I think we got zero budgeted for July through December, and we're looking at, you know, possibly getting this done in 2020 after we commission and do the implement the hydraulic analysis here in the fall.
So would you do a brief explanation of isochronous and why that's important?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's two real functionalities for generators, droop and isochronous. And in isochronous mode, if you have a light bulb turned on, the generator is going to decrease in speed unless you give it more fuel. And so if you have 1,000 light bulbs turned on in isochronous, it's going to give it as much fuel as it takes to pick up those 1,000 light bulbs. So basically, it's following load all the time. Everybody's lights, everybody's heaters, water heaters come on in the morning. Isochronous mode follows load. Droop follows load much more slowly. If you turn on 1,000 light bulbs, it's only going to pick up 5% of that at first, or it's going to pick up. It's going to give it 20% gas instead of putting the gas pedal to the floor and picking them all up. It's going to take it slow. It's going to be a lot much more slowly. Droop machines, you can't have everything trying to pick up all the load at once, because they'll fight each other. Because they'll think, you know, one be trying to pick up the load and the other one says, well, I need to pick up the load. And so you'll get this oscillation between isochronous units. So when I say isochronous load sharing, if you're going to have two units on the system that are actually going to be picking up these loads all the time, they got to talk to each other. They got to know, hey, oh, you did pick some up load up. Okay, I don't need to pick up as much. Or how about I take up half of it? Right? And that's what TIE does. So you typically only have one isochronous unit on, or you have a pair of isoch units on, sister units with each other. But the bigger and the more you have in generators on a grid, the stiffer that grid gets, and the less the light bulb will affect the speed of the units. So that's why it's important. That's why the United States has such a big grid. And it's more important for us to have larger grids as well, because it really affects the frequency, which is what I'm talking about, speed of the units, less. That kind of helps?
Yeah, that helps, yeah. Okay. I just wanted to make sure everybody understood how we manage that. And I think at time we've used diesel for isochronous, have we? Yeah.
Yeah, basically, the difference between isochronous and droop is the speed of the response based on load. So the isochronous machine, usually you need one of those in the system, and it establishes the frequency. And it does whatever it can to keep that frequency set. So in our case, it's 60 hertz. You know, we are island, and we can make it 59 if we want here at the board decision. But we make it 60 hertz, and so as you bring on load, that would drag it down, and the isochronous machine does everything it can to maintain 60. The other ones all follow it. They're load followers. They're in droop, and so they're lazier, and they'll pick up the load and support it, and eventually catch up with the isochronous machine and bring it back to its whatever its set point is. Pretty close.
Oh, thank you.
So you need one of those. You need one isochronous machine. So now, you mentioned about the diesels. The diesels, by nature, respond extremely fast, much faster than the water wheels do, right? And so naturally, we have a diesel machine on, especially a large diesel machine. Let's say the ones that catch can bag 3, bag 4. We make those the isochronous machine because it responds so fast, almost instantaneously to load changes.
All right.
But we don't need it. We need something else. And the great machines right now in the system are the two at TIE. When those two are in isochronous, that just makes an excellent pair, and then the whole system follows it.
Thank you. Continue on.
Moving on to RR 19306 on page 42, the gravel and Ringle switch yard substation. That contract's been awarded and should be completed by September. Not much else to report today. Any questions? Moving on, RR 19307, page 43. Helipads on the Cleveland Peninsula. So I think we've reported this to the board before. Yeah, our initial assessment went out there, and we thought we might be able to salvage them, just replace the decks. And so right now we've got an engineering effort going on to go out and assess each of them individually and see what it's going to take to replace them. We got 10 helicopter pads in inventory, and the value of those on the books, I think, is $117.5. if I recall correctly, we were in the $30,000 to $35,000 for a complete helipad installed at the locations that we installed the last big batch we did. So once we have the field assessment done, then we'll look at making some adjustments and potentially putting that out to contract.
Perfect.
Okay, Mr. Chair, just a question. Looking at the pictures, it looks like the edges of those things broke like that. They need to be supported at the corners with a different design or something when they're installed.
So those are the old wood ones.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're completely failed, we're just going to pull them out and we're going to put the new aluminum ones on.
Okay, they're supported to where they're
going. Yeah, it'll be a different support structure. Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions on this? Okay. Moving along, R19308, hydraulic power unit. Ty, I'll let Ed talk about that. He really likes this project.
Keeps giving. So last summer, most of you remember or were here as we did we pulled the gate up and did an inspection of the intake gate at the Ty Lake House. And in part, that was to make an opening in the tunnel to get the ROV in. There was some deferred maintenance on that gate due to this operations of the hydraulic power unit. It lives 188 feet underground. It's very difficult to get to and lives in an extremely crappy environment. It rains on it continuously. So we actually went in and Robert rewired the whole thing. We got it running. We left, come back, I think it was 2 days later, and it malfunctioned again. All the limit switches were already full of water. So I'm not giving any fault for the deferred maintenance. It was just impossible to maintain the gate. We're going to move that HPU, put it up top side where it's easily accessible, and now run hydraulic lines down to the gate cylinder. That's what this project is going to do.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ed. Any questions on that one? It is in a miserable environment, and I think this will be a good long-term solution. As you can see, this is one of the items I was hoping to get you guys out to the site to kind of give you a first-hand feel where the intake structure is located. It's planted right on the side of a mountain, and obviously that's reflected in the cost here for the helicopter mob and demob cost for that particular project. It's a large component. Anytime we do something up there, it's really expensive, and you got to make sure you bring every single thing with you, or it's another helicopter trip down to get a screwdriver or a wrench or something. So very difficult, and it's just miserable to get down into the bottom. Our manager's got a pretty good workout the last time. All right, moving on to RR19309, page 45. Marker balls on the Tai transmission line. That's scheduled. That work's scheduled to be completed this September, and so we've got all the marker balls been purchased. We're ready to go, and we'll have another little item that will come up here on another one of these that we'd like to marry these two marker ball projects together. We've got some stuff on the Swan line that we feel needs some immediate attention. Mob and demob cost for this type of activity is pretty high with specialized equipment, crews, helicopters and such, and it'd be the best interest, I think, of the organization to keep those two projects combined if possible.
Thank you. We can do that.
Any questions on this? Pretty straightforward stuff. Okay. Moving on. RR19311. Pier and ramp. Ed, you want to talk about this anymore? I think we touched on it a little bit earlier, but...
Yeah, I think we covered this already. This is the airplane float access pier and ramp that we talked about yesterday.
replacing the original wood structure.
Any follow-up question? Okay, moving along. Snow survey markers and gauges. We're talking about installing these in December, so later this winter. Get the snow pillows, comms that connects them. Anything you want to add to that, Robert?
No, it's just similar to the lake level sensor. These snow pillows are going to be out in the middle of nowhere. And there's no power out in the middle of nowhere, and there's no comm communication cable. So we've got to have, and snow gets 20 feet deep. So you got to have these things 20 feet off the ground. You have to have solar 20 feet off the ground, your batteries. And then you got to have radios to communicate back to the plants. So we've already come up with designs in-house, how to get it 20 feet off the ground. We've already ordered all the equipment. And I think Marcy just wrote something down and said the snow pillow showed up already. So.
Yeah, they're in Michigan.
Yep, so they got in already. And that's going to be a fun project, but it'll also give us, come January, it'll give us an idea of what that snowpack is prior to getting up there and actually getting boots on the ground. And we can kind of get a lot better training to see how it's progressing and how it's actually completing, whether we're going into it or coming out of the snow season.
And it is planned to be in operation by this winter, not installed in December.
Be operational by December,
yes.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering, timetable. Got to do it when there's no snow there. Yes, Andy.
Yeah, there was big interest at NOAA here a few weeks back when they had their workshop, their drought workshop on snow surveys. And a lot of questions came up, who's got snow pillows, who's monitoring snowpack, etc. I was just wondering, is there an intent to share this data with NOAA as you collect it?
It's an option, yes. Right now, as we don't have any snow data yet to share, we haven't talked about it.
Okay.
But yeah, no, absolutely, it's an option.
So we just so you know, that KPU, we share all of our meteorological data at our plants with NOAA, and so they get an idea in that section of Revilla Island of what's going on, right? That's integrated into their plants. So we collect things like wind, rain, rainfall, temperatures, etc. So that's integrated daily to them. But so this would be interesting, right? It'd make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. We're just getting started with the snow pillows and the rain gauges at Tahiti. We have plenty of data along where we have all that meteorology and stuff along. It's just the remoteness of Tahiti and the challenges of it. We're overcoming now.
I think that's all a good plan. I think you should call NOAA and tell them that you're willing to provide the materials and labor if they provide the helicopter. Then we can share the data. That's my plan. If they want the information.
Okay, moving on. That brings us to the station switchgear. And just so you guys know, we're going over the existing R&R projects right now. We'll get into the new ones. I just wanted to give the board an opportunity, and if there were any changes from last year to this year, to see those. We've talked a bit about the station switchgear, moving that into, we had a combined design build proposal before. We didn't like the bids that came out. And we've changed that to starting just doing an independent engineering component first and then going out to bid. Any questions on that? I think we've talked most of that through. Okay. Moving on to RR19318. Sight glass switches. That one's pretty straightforward. Any questions on that? Okay. 19319, the valve control manifold. Any comments on Robert, you got anything to add to that, or anybody have any questions at all on that particular item? Okay, we'll keep moving.
Yeah, just I see you're using, I don't know what you're using, is it rest rocks that you're using out there?
Yeah.
And you got the solenoid valves, are those holding up good, or?
The valves themselves are good. It's the plates in the ports and all of the things that the valve actually ports over, that those are the ones that are the challenge. In my write-up, I'll show you the design of how the new distribution valve controller and that hold.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, good. That brings us on to.
Yes.
I'm trying to catch up, so, and LVDT.
LVDT?
Yeah.
Oh, it's it just detects the how far something will move.
It's an acronym.
Yeah. So it'll just tell you how far a piston, like for example, if you've got a piston with a stroke of 10 inches, an LVDT goes on it and it will detect at 10 inches, send an 4 to 20 analog signal back to the controller to know how far that moved.
If I may.
Yes.
Yeah, an example of an LVDT is the stylus and cartridge on a phonograph. So as that stylus and needle follows that groove that modulates, that's one of the earliest examples of an LVDT.
Thank you.
A linear variable differential transformer.
Awesome.
There you go.
I could have said that, but you'd have
been. It's like the reach from the recliner.
Okay, that brings us to RR19321, flashboard gate trigger assembly. Ed, you just want to give a brief update on where we're at there?
This is part of the flashboard gate trigger modifications. Remember last fall we had an issue where there was a partial trigger trip. And this is what Coons come up with, who's Coons was the ones that built the flashboards. They come up with this retrofit, which will go on kicker number 14 up against the south pier, and it will add additional forces to those kicker braces back to the trigger to keep positive force on the trigger at all times. What we run into last year, for those that weren't here, is that because of the low reservoir elevations and above normal temperatures, we had some thermal expansion in the dam, which caused the kickers to actually move off of the bearings like an eighth of an inch, then they didn't move back when they contracted. And that left slack in the trigger mechanism, which the bucket, the water bucket that overweights the trigger, was the weight of that bucket itself was able to pull up on the trigger portion. This will now put a positive force on those all the time in case that situation or occurs in the future.
It's just a spring actuator, isn't it?
It's just a spring. It's all it is, a spring and a piece of pipe.
Keeps it loaded.
Keeps it loaded.
Okay. Moving on to RR19324. Stuffing box units at Swan Lake. Do you want to speak to this one too, Ed?
Stuffing blocks at Swan Lake. This has been an ongoing 20 years of this. And the stuffing box is a mechanical seal between the runner and the external turbine pit. And they have always leaked. And we're going to go in and replace them and put new mechanical seals in place. At the same time, we're going to replace all of the wicket gate bushings and control arm bushings in the distributor ring, which is what opens and closes the wicket gates controlling the water flows.
So, and unlike a marine stubbing box, they're made to leak in order to keep them lubricated.
These are made to leak a small amount to the typical same thing, same concept design, but these are actually leaking severely.
Okay.
But yeah, you're correct. They are designed to weep.
Is this a split seal or?
It is a segmented carbon seal.
So be able to clamp it on the shaft or you got to take the shaft off?
There's two parts that will be an upper and lower just with a carbon seal inside of it.
Is this something you can do in-house or is this a contract?
We're going to do it in-house with oversight from Livestroy, the manufacturer.
Great. Any more questions for Ed on that? All right. So that concludes our R&R projects that we currently have approved with some minor adjustments that reflect that what we're anticipating to complete in the next 6 months and total over all project costs. We also discussed that as well. That takes us to the new proposed project. We kept it pretty slim down in the past, and it holds true as well with this particular budget. When we're vetting R&R projects, we try to focus on reliability and safety issues as our main priority. And then there's some other items in there as well. So we'll start rolling into those. Number one here proposed is the design phase of the new property. Just put a rough number of $25,000 in there to start looking at potential design for that property and layout of buildings and such. I think there's an opportunity there. It would probably cost a little bit more money, but I can envision using this also, the building, as a bit of an education tool to address some of the public questions. There's no reason we couldn't put a solar array on one end of the roof and then maybe have a small wind turbine on the other and have a big readout that says this is the cost of power at this moment coming out of this particular unit or some other statistical deal. I think there's some opportunity there, and we'll be looking at that as we review potential designs and maybe integrate an educational component into our building as well.
You're thinking about doing the design in-house? Does that work?
No, we'll go outside. I'll say that's out of our area of expertise for the most part. But I think we've got some folks in-house that have done a fair amount of construction in Southeast, and that'll help us kind of keep it realistic as well for the environment that we're working in.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Trey, we may have discussed this before. Are you envisioning a separate office building and warehouse or one combined?
Two separate buildings.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Any questions on that? We don't really have much to report now. It's just a preliminary deal.
Would it be two separate buildings because we have two lots there with a common wall?
I think we would separate it out just to keep, you know, noisy, more type of yard type, warehousing type activities over here, and then office and, you know, boardroom and type stuff separate of that.
Okay.
But, you know, once we get into design review, maybe we find out maybe cost drivers suggest that might be a better move. So.
Okay.
The office will have an apartment or two in it as well. Is that the plan?
I'm thinking above the warehouse, possibly. Okay. Just to kind of keep that part separate, too. You see some of these multi-use buildings downtown, quite a few of them, where you might have apartments up above and somebody's trying to run a business down below, clunk, 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 you know, or something. And it's like that doesn't mix as well. But if it was above the warehouse, it'd be kind of separate away from the administrative activities, if you will.
Yes, Bob.
Trey, as you're thinking that you would look at some options or bring those back later on, or
are
you just going to go ahead
and put your... Oh, no, this will all be vetted with the board completely. I definitely want to get board input. I think there's an opportunity to do more than just a building for administrative purposes and certainly seek the board's input on that, how we can do it right, And we got a unique opportunity, and we have a great location that gives good exposure. And I think we could have a definitely have a public education component integrated into the building.
It'll be shaped like a LED light bulb.
Yeah. A couple little dots.
It's swirling.
Yeah.
The Guggenheim.
Yeah. Put a Tesla coil out there in front.
There you go.
Jacob's ladder, a few things. That's the problem with that. Okay, moving up on to the next one is fire protection upgrade at Tyee. This is an area that's deficient, and I think we've got a good plan to update that to the standards that where it needs to be. And Clay, if you want to add anything to that, if you think it's necessary, if anybody has any questions on it, it's essentially bringing up this particular fire protection system up to industry standard.
I think Narek probably describes it pretty well. Basically, we found a spot where we could do some improvement and bring the whole thing up to a little bit better standard than it is. This will address that. So.
Okay. Question? Okay. And so, moving on to this next marker ball item, there's 12 marker balls here that we feel that we should get installed, and there is an item under new business that we'll be requesting that this be sole sourced to the existing contractor so we can save some mob and demob costs. And I think the board would agree that it's safety related, and we should expedite this this particular project. Any questions on? Okay. Next item, security upgrades. We have, you know, part of our cybersecurity review also has to do with physical security, and there's some items here that we've identified that are relatively easy and low-cost mechanisms to enhance some of our security. A fair amount of focus out at Swan Lake because we anticipate more traffic out there with the terminal fishery that's there, and more folks wandering around. And so we'd like to secure that a little bit better. Also include some fencing modifications at Bailey that tie into the transition and access to our equipment into that particular facility. So nice, pretty straightforward.
Will we have some updating on signage?
Yes. I think that's an area that it's fairly low cost and is certainly of benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the addition of cameras and just a sign there that says, hey, look up, there's a camera.
Yeah.
That also helps as well. So. Any questions? Okay. The next item is servers. This is an area we talked about a couple of times. And you know, our servers are old. We're having multiple problems with them. We've limped them along as long as we can, and we definitely need to get them replaced as soon as possible, or else we'll have some problems with our data retention. So I think everybody's familiar with servers. Any questions there?
Mm-hmm.
Next item, the Styx HMI historian modernization, and I'll say that we've abandoned one of our R&Rs and have kind of consolidated it here in this single one, and I will let Robert maybe give a little bit more of an overview on some of the detail involved in this, because it's fairly detailed project.
As we talked about in our discussion on cybersecurity, a lot of our HMIs are running on Windows XP, so it is absolutely time to change those machines out. We had a project, an R&R project last year, where we had expense items for updating the historians at all the projects, including the CIBA office. And those historians, because they're, again, on the older machines and the software needed to be upgraded, we integrated that project into this as well. And then the Styx modernization, where we talked about Styx was written in Visual Basic 6.0, it's an older program. It's also being commander being sent from Tai to Swan Lake to operate Swan Lake based on a load table, when just the load table should be sent to Swan Lake and it should operate on its own. So this whole project will encompass all of those values. In addition to that, we were having troubles with our HMI screens, and still are to this day, where we'll get errors here and there and we'll have to call our contractor, one of our contractors, to try and fix that error continually. It seems to be at least once a month, twice a month that we have a problem there. That software owned by GE, it's called Prophecy iFix.
Just about now.
That division of GE has been sold to Emerson, and there are some still transitional things there, but you can't get support on it. It's just kind of a mess. So this project would be to integrate and combine all three of those projects that I mentioned, and upgrade the HMI systems, the human machine interface systems, throughout the entire system for SEMA.
And eventually it's going to go out to competitive bid as well. So this we've got just 60 grand in here for this particular 6 month period as we do some of the preliminary work and get the project firmed up a bit, and then we'll go out to bid on it, and that'll obviously be brought back to the board. So that concludes our R&R projects, and that portion.
All right. So, so we have a motion on the floor, and I comment that we'll accept it as amended and corrected. So, if that's the understanding, are there any questions in regard to the R&R? Have they been proposed?
I was just going to say that I think the motion is fine as it is. We did change the overall budget of the one project, but what's being approved is this 6 month period, and we didn't change that number, so
okay,
it's good to go.
Good to go. So you heard the motion, we've had a discussion. Anything else? Please call the roll.
Siebertson?
Yes.
Coos?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Von Bargen?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Thank you.
So that brings us to 11:58, lunch is at 12. So at this point, I would like to recess for lunch. We'll be back at 1 o'clock. Is that correct?
Yep.
All right. Thank you. Carl, you got that?
I do. I have a teleconference at 1 that I cannot miss, so I will not be able to finish the rest of the meeting.
Andy will take over.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carl.
See you tonight.
Yep.